Welcome to the Danny Klinkscale Reasonably Irreverent Podcast. Insightful and witty commentary, probing interviews, and detours from the beaten path.
Every once in a while, we have to bring out the big dog.
Yeah.
Oh, God help us. It's time for Danny Unleashed. Sponsored by Easton Roofing, where integrity matters. Go to EastonRoofing.com for more.
Hour number two of the program begins right now. Danny Klinkscale brought to you by my friends at Easton Roofing. We had some hail damage in the neighborhood. One of my friends had a little hail damage. The folks from Easton gave me a call. How about that? They said, look, we got people in your neighborhood that have had some hail damage, so it looks like you guys got hit pretty hard on whenever the last storm was. Do you want us to come out and take a look? And they did. We discovered that we had a big problem. Big problem. Wiffle ball in the gutter. Wiffle ball in the gutter.
Nice.
Said wiffle ball has been extracted. Problem has been averted. Turns out we didn't have a problem, but I know it. I sleep easy because Easton Roofing is always looking out for me. Easton Roofing, integrity matters. Joe Spiker and his great team. Happy to come by and give you a free inspection, and if work's necessary, a free estimate. Never just running you right into a re-roofing. Oh, let's get that insurance to pay for it. Come on, here we go. That's not how they do things. If you put a false claim in, it can cost you a lot of money and be big problems for you. Easton Roofing will take you through the entire process. Sometimes all you need is a repair. Sometimes you do need a re-roof. And if you do, multiple lenders financing the Easton Roofing. Not just one, like most roofing companies, many, means you save money in the long run. Easton Roofing, no payment collected until you're 100% satisfied. Call Joe and his great team at 913-257-5426 or see him online at EastonRoofing.com. Danny, how are you, my friend?
Doing just fine. I'm here. The weather's breaking, and we are going to enjoy ourselves. A great weekend. I think we've got some fascinating football. We have some intriguing Royals to think about and muse about. So,
it's been an eventful week at Kauffman Stadium, is it not?
There's a lot to dive into, that's for sure.
Yeah. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start with the changing of the guard with the Kansas City Royals?
Sure. I think that's the biggest story. I mean, I'm looking forward to the college football, so we can do that. And I think the Chiefs are interesting, too. So I think it's all interesting. But, yeah, because I think that this is just something because we really – this is the case a lot of times when the areas we work – that we don't know exactly what the dynamics are behind the scenes, so we're left to speculate, and there's a lot of different ways you can go. And I think that that makes this interesting. The timing of it, you would think that this could have easily been an after-the-season type of thing. You can drum up a scenario where maybe Dayton Moore was literally supposed to move upstairs and not be as impactful, and maybe he didn't like that. I don't know. That's one thing I thought of. He did appear at the press conference and didn't take questions but made a statement. It was all pretty odd. So what it does is lead you to and then the person who's taking over was his right-hand man forever. And worked under him, seemingly a brotherly type of relationship. And if he's on board and the owner is talking about the fact that he didn't think that they were basically embracing modernity in baseball and the analytics.
You mean the modern baseball?
Yeah, not using, having an analytics department, but maybe not using it as much as they were, then you would think that J.J. Piccolo would have to be sort of on the other side of it, and maybe the two of them clashed more than we would think. I don't know. It's just so hard to figure out why now and why J.J. Why not? Of course, I think what happens subsequently to this also might lend itself. I'm not saying that JJ is going to go too or whatever, but I just think doesn't the whole thing seem just a little bit strange to you?
I would say that just because someone has spent a long number of years together in that spot, that they necessarily at the end of that run are this far apart on a lot of things. They may have been initially, and that's what caused the form of the bond. But I think it's quite not only quite possible, but quite probable that by the time we've got to this point, I think J.J. Piccolo and Dayton Moore have very different opinions on what the best way to move forward in an organization.
And the other thing that crossed my mind is that maybe as time went on and he won a championship and brought that to Kansas City, that Dayton Moore allowed his philosophies of life to even more color the way that he ran his organization. As far as player acquisition, the type of person that he wanted to bring into the organization, maybe viewing that in a lens that was equally, if not more important than their baseball ability. So, you know, like I said, when you don't really know, you have to try learned speculation, which is what I would try to think that I do. But it leaves me with about multiple thoughts on it.
Yeah, I do, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I am definitely of the opinion that J.J. Piccolo has made it very clear that he is of the, you know, much more so ready to embrace and go down the analytics road. I don't think there's any way he has the job that he sits and converses with John Sherman, and he isn't preaching a lot of the things that clearly the Cleveland Guardians did and do,
right,
and have had success with, or he wouldn't have the job. I think it would have been very easy. In some ways, I feel like a lot of change has to be coming, because I would think that if you're – I guess one of two things has occurred here for J.J. to get the job. Either one, John Sherman likes him as a guy and has just said – and this is scary. This is a reason to worry – and has just said, I like this guy. I'm going to give him a shot. Right? That's possible. That happens. Right? You know?
Sure.
We keep Curtis around. Right. We like him. We like him. He's a good guy.
I can't be trusted to do anything worth a damn.
But. Adam and I have back problems from carrying him every day, but we like him, so yeah. We keep him around. Right?
I'm just here.
That's one option. Option number two is that John Sherman's like, I'm blowing the whole thing up. And over the time that he's owned the club, I think J.J. Piccolo would have come from behind the pack to out in front. He would have had to have proved himself even more. I would think that your first inclination would be, I've got to go out of house. And to not, you know, if you're going to get away from Dayton, and we know the math and the data is important to him based upon what he said. So to go with J.J., J.J. must have really blown him away. It's one or the other. Either he's getting a free pass or he looks like the best candidate that John Sherman could possibly find. I don't think he can just kind of – I think he's either going to be a disaster and gone in 18 months, and in disaster, I mean, just going to not be what John Sherman wants him to be and be gone in 18 months, or he's got an excellent chance of it working. Let's be clear, though. Being the GM of a small market baseball team is not an easy job.
No, but unfortunately for Dayton Moore, maybe, or unfortunately for whoever is going to be sent packing, John Sherman did come from the Cleveland Guardians, who once again – somehow, with a team that I think
an
average baseball fan would look at and look at those bunch of Humpties. Who the hell are they? And they, you know, when the division was going to be won by four or five games, it was one thing. But then the Guardians have pressed on the gas, and now they're going to have a legitimately nice record at the end of the year and look like a good ball club with a bright future. And they've basically ejected every player that was worth any money at all except for Jose Ramirez on their team.
Yeah.
And now they're winning again. So he's like, well, looky there. And, you know, the Rays have already been there, but where he came from, they just keep churning and burning and bringing new guys in and developing pitching, which, of course, that's another one. And the other thing that has crossed my mind as well, which kind of ties into one of the other things I talked about, I mean, it couldn't be a good look for an owner to have his team be the poster child for being a bunch of doofuses as far as the vaccine was concerned.
Well, I said that as well, that and it's not.
Lapping the field with the
right
amount of.
And the damning part, and this is what I said, is that they then turn around and get the vaccine as soon as they're traded. I mean, I don't want to get into a debate about, the politics involved in it, but I think what's undeniable is that these guys were willing to do it, and Dayton Moore couldn't get him to do it. Dayton Moore couldn't get him to play ball for him. And they'll play ball for the Blue Jays. They'll play ball for the Yankees. And so I think, you know, it doesn't matter where you stand on that subject. Dayton Moore's job is to lead a team out onto the baseball field. And he was not able to do it where quickly other teams were. I said to somebody around the organization, I said, I don't know that Dayton Moore survives this. And I don't think they understood what I was getting at. Like, well, you know, and they got, well, it's, you know, it's a choice. And, you know, we laid it all out. I said, no. My point is, if you're the owner and you're in the Billionaire Boys Club, you're already getting the your team sucks part of the equation, which I don't think they all, you know, I don't think that goes on. But yeah, you know, the you know, just like, okay, I'm already getting it. And then you're like, and we're the ones that have the biggest problem.
Twice as many.
And then when they go ahead and get the vaccine for someone else, I said this in the open, that has to be perceived simply as a lack of leadership.
I agree. Either that or he didn't care to try to do it. He felt like he agreed with him. Maybe, you know, he didn't want to say that. He said it was, he was disappointed and all that. Maybe he wasn't really disappointed. I don't know. But like you said,
I don't care. And I don't care what he thought. I just know that they played for other teams. They wouldn't play for his. And there's no way that that can be considered a positive amongst leadership. And I don't like saying it because I think Dayton Moore absolutely is a leader of men. And I think he led this franchise to great heights. But in this time, in this day and age, in this environment, he did not lead. And anybody who wants to get their feelings hurt over that, tough. I mean, it's.
Right.
It's undeniable. I won't even bother arguing with you. Well, and I'm sure there are some staunch Dayton defenders that are like, that's completely. It's 100% mathematically based in fact. Players would play for others, would not play for him. Period. And I don't know how that can be. So then when you go, well, we tried to get Jacob Junis to throw a third pitch, but he wouldn't listen. Oh, but he'll listen to the Giants? And by the way, Jacob Junis is regressing back to being Jacob Junis of late with the Giants as well. It's not been exceptional.
But the first part of that story still is accurate.
But yeah, I mean, so like,
and important.
You know, that's the symptom is the vaccine. The disease is they're not listening to him.
Right.
Right. That's and so how can you expect him to lead a new charge of analytics? They're not listening to him.
Right. So that might have been the start. But it also could have been, so what do you think about the fact that when they elevate him upstairs and made J.J. Piccolo the general manager, that is there a possibility that he was supposed to go up there and play nice and he didn't want to? You know, that he wasn't really supposed to still be in charge? I don't know. Maybe that was part of it, too.
It has been. I don't know.
I'm just floating multiple theories here.
I'm with you. And I think there's a little bit. I do wonder Dayton's inability to read the room or a false sense of security. I mean, I don't doubt John Heyman's reporting that he was surprised by it. And I say that if you are surprised by it, you're not in touch. Because there's the things we just documented. There's a lot of fan unrest. Okay. And there's a lot of losing. And there's ample evidence of the drafting has been terrible. Asa Lacy is completely lost. Are you going to empower a guy to give $7 million to someone else to just be nothing? Which is where Asa Lacy looks Rick Ankiel-ish right now. It looks like a disaster. It is a dumpster fire. Again, anyone upset? Look at the numbers. It's a dumpster fire right now.
We're not making it up.
No. And so, you know, all those things is why it's amazing to think. I want to say that I think I said I'd let him go into next year, and I think it was almost that's what I think's going to happen, and I want Dayton to succeed. I think I was probably making that statement based on my heart. It's now happened, so maybe that's taken away, I don't know, my inability to be cold and say he's got to go. Right? And so now it's easier. But the idea that it's a surprise, there's so many reasons to do it. Again, you can disagree with it, but you cannot be surprised by it.
No, because I can come up with five different possible scenarios that I think are maybe the reason for it. Maybe they all are. Maybe they all are in confluence. Maybe it was, you know, everything was kind of smooth sailing, and then the vaccine thing happened, and it was like, what, we had to field a minor league team for an entire weekend, you know, which kind of was a trigger point for maybe them, you know, fielding a minor league team as a strategy for the rest of the season. But and then, you know, could it be that finally airing the organization's laundry in a national publication was the final straw? I don't know. Could it be that impactful? You know,
I think the idea started with Toronto, and I think it may be finished with that. Listen, I don't think there's any way, because I think if you didn't want to conclude that, you would have waited 2 weeks for the end of the season. And John Sherman wanted to make a statement. He wanted to make a statement. I heard that Dayton was not supposed to be there, but said he wanted to say something. Because he said something and then he left. Because because I texted Todd, I couldn't see it. I texted Todd and said, when they started breaking down what had gone wrong and all this, I said, is Dayton still there? Like, are they really? He's watching his now former team detail what they think he did wrong. And he said, no, he left. He made a statement and left. And that speaks to, I think John Sherman wanted to make it clear to his fans, but to the organization as well. It's happening now because it goes no further. When I decide it's time, it's time. We don't, you know, put lipstick on this. It happens now. And I want everyone to know I'm the sheriff. It's my decision.
Well, I absolutely agree with that, because it would have been so easy to wait till the season was over.
Or to let Dayton announce his retirement effective immediately at the end of the year. And right. He made sure that that is not what happened.
Or they could have actually even made it half and half. You know, they could have said by mutual agreement or something like that. But they decided they didn't want to do that. They wanted to say a change had to be made. And that's something that says to me that something finally happened, you know, that maybe John Sherman did see the final, you know, this newspaper article. You know,
it might have been Dayton's reaction to the article.
Yeah, that's true.
I think it's more likely.
Because a lot of people didn't like how he reacted to it. I mean, I think the consensus is it was a fair piece. And instead of talking about getting the pitching better, he was talking about unnamed sources. And I think there's a sense, if you're the owner, going, you're focusing on the wrong thing.
Right.
Like, don't spend time sparring about whether we know the name of the person who said it or not. Is what they're saying true? The answer I think John Sherman came to was yes. These are all issues, and that's what you should be talking about.
And anybody of Dayton Moore's age, maybe a little older, you don't get real tough stories broken without unnamed sources.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen. And for somebody of my generation, I mean, all the President's Men's key guy was Deep Throat. It wasn't James Jones, identified person, you know, Secretary of the Interior. It was revealed who it was.
Mark
I forget
Felt.
His name, Mark Felt, yes. But they didn't say that then. They needed Deep Throat. And you're not going to get difficult stories broken with people talking on the record. I mean,
no.
Because they're not going to say the impactful things that they will when they're, because they're intrinsically involved all the time. You know, they're at peril. If you're going to get something good about the Royals organization and pitching, people who are still in the organization are going to have to be quoted by name. Well, then they're not going to do that.
I'm more inclined to believe an unnamed source sometimes than a named source, because the unnamed source must really be close to the guy.
See, if you're defensive about it, or you don't like the story, what you think is that the guys who wrote the story are just dreaming it up. Yeah. Well, no. They have sources. They just can't name them.
Yeah. Let's take a break. Danny Klinkscale's with us. He's brought to you by Easton Roofing, a little Danny Unleashed. Danny Klinkscale from DannyKlinkscale.com. We're here at Hen House, where you can come check out their new New York-style bagels. They are absolutely the best in town. Always boiled in water. It has barley malt added into it. Helps give it that great flavor. Gives the bagel a signature taste, texture, that wonderful bite into it feeling. I think I enjoy, like, when you say texture, bagels are one of the foods that it's fun to eat.
Yes.
Especially when they have this perfect style. Just like the Jewish community founded back in New York City, they are absolutely New York-style bagels. You will love them. They're exclusively at your neighborhood Hen House Bakery.
More of Danny's Reasonably Irreverent podcast after this.
Hey, Kansas City. Joe Spiker, Easton Roofing here. This happens all the time. I had a homeowner call me because a roofing company talked him into submitting a claim for hail damage. The claim was not denied, but all the insurance paid for was cosmetic damage to the roof. Of course, there was no damage to the roof that mattered. The roofing company was just doing what most do, turn it in and hope to get lucky, with no thought to the consequences they leave behind for the homeowner. The homeowner asked me what to do, and unfortunately, he was stuck paying his deductible for a bunch of unnecessary repairs. Because if he doesn't get it fixed, the insurance won't cover his roof anymore. Turning in an insurance claim is not something to do willy-nilly. It is a serious procedure that requires serious people to help you through the process. That's why you should never turn in an insurance claim without having Easton Roofing take a look first, for free, and keep you from filing erroneous insurance claims that can hurt you in the end. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
All right, the good sense. End of the hour answer. Yankees have 16 walk-off wins this season. Who was the last team to do that? 16 walk-off wins in a season.
Royals.
Nope.
Yankees.
Nope.
Astros.
Nope.
We've come up with everyone that would be fun for it to be the question today. So now it's just
Mariners.
Randomness.
The 1997 Florida Marlins, who won the World Series.
Not fun at all.
The last team before them to do it, the 1987 Minnesota Twins, who also won the World Series. So the last two teams that have done it, it's been 35 years, have won the World Series. I don't think that necessarily means the Yankees are going to. It just means they're a really good team. And you can hit home runs like that, and you can win a lot of games in walk-off fashion.
Is it harder or easier for the home team to win extra inning games now?
I think easier.
Really? I was about to say harder.
I think easier because, well,
the idea being you know what you need going in. Or,
well, but you know what you need yeah. going in.
But
the
I mean,
old way. That was my first thought. But then I'm like, well, wait a minute.
The other team scoring, which they do a lot, does put a little more pressure on you. Maybe they bring the closer in and he wasn't in. I don't know. It's an interesting, but I guess my point is it's different. It is a change in the way the world works of baseball and should impact. I mean, the other day, what was it, the Guardians won in 15 innings? I mean, that shouldn't happen.
No.
No.
The whole was designed not to happen.
Oh, and I did find out that's not an earned run for the pitcher.
Yeah. Correct.
The second one is, though, right?
Right.
Right. Yeah, first one's not.
I would think it favors the offensive clubs.
Right. So it would favor good teams.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're, you know, a team, you know.
If you're the Rays.
If you're more of an offensive-minded, you know, if you're going to pound the ball out as opposed to, like, because you're good at putting runs on the board and you're, you know, so if they get one, you're more likely right. to get two.
I mean, if you're the Rays, it's not as easy.
Right.
Because the Rays
right.
are not an offensive
yes.
minded team.
Yes. I knew what you meant. Yeah. I knew what you meant.
But anyway, I'm looking forward to the postseason. This is.
Of course, you're an Astro fan.
But also, there's no extra inning rule like that in the postseason.
Yeah, there is not. Danny Klinkskill's with us. We are at Hen House where I have. I'm going to go ahead and have a little more of the New York style bagel. Absolutely wonderful. No, you cannot have any of mine.
I have not made that step yet. I'll have to do that next break.
It would require movement.
It would. That's once I sit down.
At least, what, eight and a half feet?
Once I mean, sit down. Yeah, but it's not just 8.5 feet. I have to get up. I have to walk around this
chair. He has to get out of his own custom-made chair.
It's probably
there. The Siebel remote throne.
I guess this is about 14 feet.
Okay. That's really pushing it.
Once I sit down, I tend to stay sat down
We've got samples. You can come sample the New York-style bagels. They're absolutely fantastic. You can buy them and take them home. They are wonderful. You will love them. If you like bagels, you're going to love bagels. Come check them out. Also, the Tippins pies. Got all the apple pies on special right now. So come check it out here at Tippins as you get ready for the Hen House with the Tippins pies as you get ready for the weekend. Danny with us, Danny Klingscale. What do you think? Cats pull the upset on OU?
No. I don't think they do. I think they'll probably play better. I think they'll be a little bit freer. But I think that the transition of Adrian Martinez to Kansas State is too difficult for them to resurrect right now. I think he came to K-State with the prime intention of not making any mistakes, and it has killed his ability to make plays. Sure, he made, you know, negative plays, but at least he made plays. Now he's like, who was the Chiefs' backup quarterback who even checked down things at camp?
Oh, Brady Quinn?
No, before him. And he was a backup for a couple, three
Steve
years.
Steve Bono or?
No.
Before Brady Quinn.
I'm not
going
to. Tyler Thigpen.
No, I wasn't going to. It was a real. It was a
Brody
veteran.
Croyle?
It was a veteran.
Kyle Orton?
No, it was a veteran. Wow. And it me the nondescript.
Jackal.
Like early 2000s. Anyway.
Lever?
Anyway, the point is, I mean, this guy was just knew that he was the, he was actually the third string quarterback. And he knew that getting the only way for him to lose his job was to make mistakes and, you know, throw picks in camp. So he just did nothing. And that's, I mean, Adrian Martinez's average yards per attempt is in the fours.
I know so what you're talking about. By the way, I know the Michigan, he went to Michigan.
Yes, Todd Collins.
Todd Collins.
Thank you. You gave me the hint, and yeah. I finally got it. Yeah, Todd Collins. He was on the team for like 3 years, and I don't think he threw a ball over 5 yards downfield, even in practice.
Yeah, no.
And sort of that's, if he's going to go into this game tomorrow feeling like a real underdog, and, you know, he's publicly talked about the fact that he thinks he's playing professional football. So maybe he's protecting himself a little bit when really his best strength as a player is to go out and mostly run and try to make plays. And so, no, I don't think they're going to spring the upset. And I think it's the least intriguing game of the three local games.
I think you're going to see more when your coach comes out and publicly says, yeah, I think my quarterback needs to be more aggressive. He's going to be more aggressive, which probably somewhat raises the chances they have of winning. I think it also somewhat raises the chances they have of getting their doors blown off. Because
that three picks.
Yeah, if you get aggressive and that turns into picks and you're down there and that thing gets rolling, it could be 41-14.
I guess my thought is that I don't know if right now he's just wired to suddenly say, after he's been captain checkdown for three games, he's suddenly just going to freewheel it. I don't know if you just throw that switch.
Or how long he does it. Okay, I'm going to be aggressive. Pick. Oh, crap.
Now, nope, the K-State defense is good enough to keep them in the game, I think. So, from that standpoint, they're going to have a puncher's chance.
They need Deuce to,
yeah,
to
they
get
need,
loose, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Deuce on the loose.
I hate
wow.
that.
You're fired.
I hate that so much. Because every person that does it on the broadcast acts like they just cracked that week.
They just didn't.
Every analyst.
It.
Oh, the deuce got loose. Tim, isn't that great?
Like when I get on the I get on the tee box and you're on the wrong side of the ball. You know, I'm left-handed. And every person thinks that they just made this up. I've heard it 10,000 times in my life, you know.
Yeah. Hey, Danny. Danny, it was Todd Collins.
Yes. We had
glad it could help.
We achieved that. We beat you to it somehow.
Well played.
Team effort.
Nice job. Kansas Jayhawks.
That's funny.
Laying seven.
The Jayhawks. I don't know if I like the seven. I think this game. I think Kansas probably be a little over.
Why is Kansas definitive? Explain to me, and there's a reason. There's an obvious one, and you'll probably go right where I would say is the obvious reason. But based upon the fact that this team has been god-awful for years, that there was, you know, some people, most people thought they were going over 2.5 here locally, but no. When I said with a ceiling of 6, I had people laughing at me and yelling at me and saying I'm ridiculous, like, slow down, you know, cut, you know. And, but now.
Were they all Donald Trump when they said that to you?
What do you mean? Is that, was
that? That's how you sounded,
that sounded
a little
like,
Trump-like.
No,
there. Slow down.
Slow down.
Slow down, big fella. Curtis did a much better one.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
The he does things much better. That's why we keep him around.
That's why I keep him around, not just because he's a nice guy.
Yeah. The no, but my point is, like, in 3 weeks, we've gone from, like, I'm an idiot for saying they could, not even that they would. My pick was 4 wins, but that they could win 6 games. That if it all breaks right, they could win 6 games. Love the over, cash the over. And now, oh, they're ready to lay 7 points to an undefeated Power 5 school. Granted, one with not much football history. Granted, one that wasn't great last year. But there's nobody has any problem with doing that.
I think it's the fact that they're scoring so many points that's doing it. They're scoring a lot of points, and they're a sound fundamental team, so they don't make mistakes. Now, their defense is still pretty bad, and they're averaging, they're giving up 7.6 yards per play to
that's what
to
I
power
keep saying.
Five teams. I mean, that's not good. So, and they are converting 69% of their third down chances. That's not sustainable. Now, is it going to happen this game that they're going to go 2 for 11 or whatever? I mean, we saw what it can happen to a team. I mean, K-State was 2 for 20 on third and fourth downs last week. I mean, that's how you lose.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Kansas is going to do that this week, but 69% is not sustainable. That's crazy. That's crazy talk. And so, but I think the reason they're that much of a favorite is the fact that they just are rolling points out there. And against pretty good opposition, making them look kind of foolish.
West Virginia did a lot last night,
yes,
to validate Kansas, to validate that point spread. I mean, that's,
yeah,
you know, not that Virginia Tech's great. They're not, but West Virginia went in and beat another Power 5 school. So,
sadly.
Yeah, and so I think that went a long way towards saying, okay, here we go. Why is the spread only 5.5 for the Chiefs? We'll talk about that next with Danny Klinkscale, a little Danny Unleashed. With Danny Klinkscale. He's brought to you by our friends at Easton Roofing, Joe Spiker and his great team, ready to help you out the way they've helped me out a couple of different times. Call Joe today at 913-257-5426. See him online at eastonroofing.com. Commercial and residential, yep. Gutters, insulation, yes. They do that as well. Go to eastonroofing.com today.
More of Danny's Reasonably Irreverent podcast after this.
Kansas homeowners, betting is legal in Kansas now. Don't make a bad bet on your roofer. Call Easton Roofing, 913-257-5426. Easton Roofing, integrity matters.
Thanks, Kay.
Dynamite.
You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB as we're live at Hen House.
The director, too.
New York-style bagels. They're right here. Delicious, savory, just what you've been waiting for. You can get it at the Hen House. You can also take advantage of the Apple Fest. It's going on right now, the early fall Apple Fest, featuring the Tippins pies, freshly made 9-inch pies featuring apple, French apple, or old-fashioned caramel apple pies for just $13.99. Which one would you go with, Danny?
I think I'd just go standard apple.
Standard apple? Okay.
Yeah.
Didn't you steal like an entire pie from a place, your parents, some kid you were babysitting once, Danny?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. A table talk pie. Famous, iconic pie in the East Coast. I don't remember. I'll say the Tippins pies are better. I don't know. Because it's long ago.
Yeah.
How am I to say? My brother one time, my aunt, who would have been my aunt then, brought a pie to our house for a special occasion. And he's a little kid, so he's trying to be nice and say something. He goes, Auntie Ruth, that pie's delicious. It's as good as store-bought.
Fantastic.
That's my mother. Head is buried in her hands.
Oh, every kid thinks a fast food burger is better than, you know, the one you got at home. And then you get older and you're like, this thing's crap.
I'm
making a burger at home.
Eddie
brother,
Murphy McDonald's bit.
My brother as close as in age me, always has always sworn by my mother's spaghetti sauce, which is like the worst most simple spaghetti sauce. Ragu, hamburger, peppers, onions, boom. That's it.
That's all.
Done because we had six kids and she had to make a lot of food.
Yeah.
And he's like, the best. It's the best. I'm like, you're on crack.
Like, you've never been to a restaurant.
Yeah. Man. Man.
All right. You wanted to mention Mizzou, Auburn. Big opportunity.
I think this is a big opportunity for Mizzou. If this season isn't going to start to go real sideways and become an interesting story in all the wrong ways, they better win this game. This is an opponent that is just sitting there waiting to get beat. They got slaughtered last week at home. Nobody wants the coach around. The players all got to be thinking that they're shocked that he still is around. How much leadership can he have? If you got anything, and I don't know if they have it, if you got anything, they don't go down and beat them, or at least, you know, it goes down to the wire and something crazy happens. Auburn beats them by a couple tutties. I don't think that's a good look at all.
Yeah, so you think losing is bad?
Oh, yeah, losing is generally bad, but in this case, I don't care what the line is. This is your game to try and win. I mean, you're losing.
I agree.
You lose this, you're losing the next two. Okay, it's sinking ship, and you're playing Vanderbilt with your season on the line, which is a horrible place to be because you're absolutely supposed to beat Vanderbilt, even though they're improved. So, yeah, big day for the Tigers.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's one that Eli Drinkwitz needs to ring a victory bell and needs to do it in a game that's not just a gimme, right? And I mean, like, they have the win over LSU. You know, that's given them a lot of mileage, you know.
Which, that team, they were who they were then. They would eventually fall apart, but yeah. They had the win over Florida a year ago.
Yeah, they had a couple decent wins last year. There's no question.
But he needs one now.
I absolutely agree. Absolutely. I think it's the most intriguing storyline of any of the three. I think Kansas, for momentum and fun and everything else, winning this one would be fine. But from the football season, Kansas will still be fine if they went out and lose and, you know, maybe take one of the next two at this homestand and they're still improved and whatever. But for momentum and fun, go win this one. And K-State, like I said, I don't think they're going to win. So I think the Missouri game is very compelling.
I'll look and see. I think it's still 5.5 on the Chiefs and Colts, isn't it?
Last time I checked.
I thought it went up a little bit.
Did it go up to 6? Maybe it is.
Sure.
Maybe it's 6.5. Maybe it's 7.
Anyway, it's in that range.
And money is all on the Kansas City side. And they're not pushing the number beyond. What does that say to you? Because I know what it says to me.
I think the number should not... I might bet the Colts in this game, actually, if I was thinking about... I think the Colts... Let's think of what we thought about the Colts a month ago, all right? That they were probably a playoff team or at least a competitive team. It's soon enough in the season that I don't think they've looked around and gone, oh, boy, we're done. I mean, this is sort of a circle-the-wagons-type game for the Colts. So if the Chiefs do go in there and cover this thing and win handily, I think that's a hell of a win. I'm going to be impressed. And the start of their season, to me, will be stamped as outstanding.
It's always hard for me to move against the Chiefs, right, because I'm a Chiefs fan, so I'm generally going to find an optimistic reason. And if I coach this game, I like the Chiefs all day. I've thought Matt Ryan was cooked for 2 years. I don't think there's anything left there. I think that makes him quite one-dimensional. Michael Pittman is maybe going to play. He does make him a lot better. I do think the Chiefs are down two really good defenders in Willie Gay Jr. and Trent McDuffie. And I think when you're down multiple defenders, it compounds itself. I think you can cover one. I think when you have to start covering two and three and four, it's not just two guys. It's a lot harder. So they're going to have to be good. But again, I think the Colts are an eminently flawed. Their left tackle's not very good, even though they're good on the inside. But Chris Jones, best on best. I'm fine with that.
And they announced today Shaq Leonard's not going to play.
Yeah,
he was questionable.
So he's out, but the Colts have the number 11 defense against the run, against the overall. You know, they're a pretty good defensive team. So why isn't the number higher? And I'm left only to conclude because Vegas thinks this is going to be a ball game.
I think it's going to be a ball game.
What kind of score are you feeling?
I still think the Chiefs are going to win, and I think it's something like more like in 27-23.
See, I think most people's thought is like 27-10, 27-13, right? And so I think the popular opinion is Chiefs and the under. And I think everybody and their brother is going to be parlaying up Chiefs and under. And so I see Jonathan Taylor. Like the other thing I heard was we heard two different defensive coaches talk about how he's at 22 miles per hour on his third step. You got to get to him before he gets going or he's really hard to tackle. That says to me the game plan is to shoot gaps.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when you shoot gaps, when you get there, it's great. You get negative plays. But when you don't, you give up big plays. I think Jonathan Taylor could have a very big day, which doesn't mean they're going to win.
Right.
Right? Because, you know, he shoots two big ones for 75 and 60s at 135 yards rushing, and it's still only 14 points.
Or they don't score. They're big gainers, but they don't,
right.
They don't go to the house.
Right. He goes from his own 17 to the, you know, the Chiefs
40.
20 or something.
Right,
yeah.
Whatever.
You know, but I just feel like the Colts are going to have a little more success than people are thinking on offense. The Chiefs are going to have to go up and down the field a little bit. I'm thinking this is more like, you know, 31-27, and if the Chiefs lay an egg and have a stinker, I am not going to be shocked. Coming off the Chargers, looking ahead to the Bucs, and playing a Colt team that's 0-1-1, just looked like crap. I don't know how you bring it for this one.
I think there's multiple reasons why you should think that this is going to be a football game, and I think the Chiefs fan base is going to be disappointed if it's a football game. I think a win here is fine. I don't care what it looks like. Then you're 3-0. You lose the game, then you got to go to Tampa, and the start of the season could be completely turned on its head, and you're not, you know, it isn't a great start. So I think any win is fine. I think the Colts will put up a real fight, and the start of the game is important. Chiefs go out and throw a couple 3-and-outs, then I think the Colts might roll up into a ball and say, boy, we're not very good.
Yeah, I do agree. I think the Chiefs could knock them out early, but that's how they're going to have to do it if it's going to be a big one. Danny, always great talking to you, buddy. Appreciate it.
Fun here.
This podcast was made possible by our great sponsors like Easton Roofing, the presenting sponsor of Kansas City Profiles at the Danny Kling Scale Reasonably Irreverent Podcast. Easton Roofing, where integrity matters. We hope you enjoyed the latest Danny Kling Scale Reasonably Irreverent podcast. Come back soon for something fresh and new.